Hi everyone, welcome to the pool party today. I have my friend Jane, who is going to be anonymous for the purpose of this episode. I'm so happy and excited to have Jane here. So, Jane, I would love for you to introduce yourself and say hello to the pool party.
Hi everyone. Yeah, I've been friends with Jules for a long time. So this is fun to be chatting to you in this format. And right now I'm about 4 years into a doctoral program in clinical psychology and also really interested in the tech psychology overlap and all things mental health. So that's me.
So, how would you describe the tech psychology overlap?
There's a million and one ways that technology and psychology overlap. You can think of anything from an app like Instagram, which is obviously changing our mental health in subtle and not subtle ways, changing our mental health, changing the way we think about ourselves, changing the way we think about our social relationships, etc. How our social comparison, what our frame of reference is for ourselves. You can think about something like that, which is not explicitly a mental health app, all the way to apps designed for therapy. There are a lot of AI chatbots coming out right now, to health technologies, so apps designed for something like weight loss that are changing our psychological relationship with our bodies and food in different ways, more in undercurrents in their products. So it's a huge range of explicit and implicit overlap between the two.
And I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because I think one thing that I've been talking with my guests about, especially this past month, is the impact of technology and platforms like Instagram and TikTok on artists and creative people's mental health, maybe some of the comparison that we do in our work and career, and some of the perceptions of how well we think other people are doing compared to us in our own careers. And I know you're someone who also has a personal creative art practice on the side, or sometimes more so in your career. And I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about that as well.
To the first point about comparison when it comes to social media, yeah, I think there's a really important conversation to be had there. I do a lot of psychological research on mindset, so the way the beliefs we have about something and how that impacts our actions and the way we think about something. And yeah, there's a lot on social comparison, right? Where if you're following all these really successful artists, you might fall into that comparison trap of thinking, oh, they're doing so much better than me, I never will, and then not taking action and then just falling into that cycle. So definitely something that's good to be aware of and kind of extract yourself when necessary. But yeah, in terms of my own creative practices, mainly writing is what it is for me. I do a lot of stream of consciousness writing. I got turned on to it a few years ago when I heard of Natalie Goldberg during the pandemic. She is a very famous writing teacher who has a lot of books on writing. The best, I think, most well-known one is Writing Down the Bones. And she talks a lot about the intersection of Zen and stream of consciousness writing, Zen and writing, in a beautiful way. And yeah, I've kind of followed in that frame. So timed writing practices where you're writing kind of faster than the internal critic can come in for a certain length of time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Writing faster than the internal critic. I think that's something that I've been thinking about lately too, almost as if like living my life in the moment is maybe being a little bit faster than the internal critic that loves to criticize every little thing. Yeah, I remember
Definitely.
you talking about this book when we were in Santa Monica earlier this summer. Yeah, and then you also mentioned there's I think like another author who writes about running who like knows that author. Could you tell us about that a little bit too?
Yes. Sorry, I'm just looking up the author's
Oh no,
name to
go
make
for
sure I
it.
have it. Oh, it's Katie Arnold. Yeah, so over the pandemic, I got really into Natalie Goldberg, like I just mentioned, and her intersection of Zen and writing. Katie Arnold is another author who is actually friends with Natalie Goldberg and was taught by her, but she's also a professional ultra runner and has won a lot of big ultra races. And as a long distance runner myself, who's also a writer, and interested in some of these spiritual overlaps of running and writing, I would definitely recommend Katie Arnold's work as well, because she kind of ties all three of them together in this beautiful way.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the runs you've done recently, and if you can name it off the top of your head, what's like the longest run you've ever done?
the longest run I've ever done is a 50K, which is the shortest ultra marathon distance out there, which is 31 miles. Wow. And yeah, I love trail running, being out in nature. It's definitely a big part of my mental health practice, my spiritual grounding practice. I mean, Jules and I lived together for several years.
You got me into running. You got me into running on a daily basis. And I've been thinking about that a lot more lately, actually, because I think during the 2 years we lived together, I'd wake up and like run every day. Yeah, it was good for my mental health. And then, well, I think about that a lot these days because I go on more walks. But there is definitely a high you get from running. There's a sense of accomplishment, but there's also a lot of focus involved. And I think about art practice sometimes as like that marathon run. And I haven't run like too many like crazy long distances. I did my first half marathon this year, but
Oh my gosh.
It was actually like a really chill one. It was the one in Maui along the west side. But there was this one dude too who I saw running, and every mile he would pull to the side and like paint. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Like after every mile he would like paint. And I think he still finished like before I did. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really cool.
Yeah. When it comes to, I suppose, like the routine of running and your schedule, your day to day, I think one thing that strikes me about you as a person is you're so in the moment in a way, and at the same time, like, you keep up this high intensity schedule, whether that's with like school or training. What do you think that comes down to?
Such a good question. I mean, definitely glad to hear I seem in the moment. Of course I
am. Yeah,
I'm very human, and I'm not always feeling like I'm in the moment, but I do think one thing that always helps me is just deciding what I'm going to do during a particular hour of the day or time period, and like having that peace of mind that things are accounted for, and then knowing during that hour, okay, this is what this is about, I can dive into this. I think that's definitely at least what helps me with focus, even if presence feels like perhaps a different thing and maybe something I'm not quite as good at, but I can definitely dial into something and focus for an hour if I need to.
Do you ever deal with intrusive thoughts as someone who is studying clinical psychology? And if you see that come up in your practice, like what's that self-observation like?
We all have intrusive thoughts. It's one of the first pieces of psychoeducation I'll tell a client when they come in and say they do. Like one of the classic things or examples we use is we've all had a thought when we're driving, or you know, when we're on the roof of a building or something, of what if I just like ran the car into something, or what if I just jumped, you know? I mean, it's really natural and normal to have intrusive thoughts like that, and they don't indicate a problem. Some people's brains are just a little bit stickier to intrusive thoughts, and where we start having an issue is actually if we just start getting worried about the intrusive thought and start taking it as something that means something about us rather than just a, you know, signal firing in our brain.
Yeah, that's actually really refreshing to hear, because I've never heard someone say that that like intrusive thoughts are actually really normal. And I think maybe that's kind of relieving for some people to
Yes,
hear.
you know, OCD, intrusive thoughts, it's one of my favorite things someone will show up with actually in therapy because it is so an hour of psychoeducation about this is how intrusive thoughts work. This is, you know, what you need to know. This is why they happen. That, like, just learning about it will improve the intrusive thoughts so much. Sometimes people come in the next week and say, cool, I'm good to go. I've been struggling with this for a year, but that hour was all I needed. Sometimes, of course, it's a lot more complex with that, especially with you know, OCD and more acute cases like that. But have you been having intrusive thoughts
Oh, actually,
lately?
like not as much lately, but you know, one thing that I've noticed is I almost have to busy myself from intrusive thoughts. I have observed like my patterns of work and this intensity that I build, and I almost feel like sometimes I have all this energy that I need to direct into like creativity or sports or like a schedule that pulls me out of the house. Because if I allow myself to like stay in my room all day and like work on one thing, I can almost overdo it. Yeah, just like anything. But I think especially earlier this year too, where I just like had no idea what was going on in my life. Like there's this one moment I was in Mexico City and I was on a hot air balloon and I was like, oh, this is sick, this is awesome, but also like I hate my life right now. And I was like, I should be enjoying this, but like this sucks.
Totally.
Yeah, like going through a breakup, you know, like just being a little bit too self-aware. I don't know if you're like following this whole like pop culture phenomenon of like Chappell Roan recently,
I
but
definitely know her music, but I don't, not much more.
yeah, let me give you a little bit of a rundown. So she became
Yeah, for
like
sure.
hella famous, like just in a short span of a few months. And then recently she's been canceling dates on her tour because she's like, I can't. Like, I
Oh
feel
my
like I
gosh.
just can't show up. But whenever she does show up, she'll like overpack the arena. Like, everyone's like there, they're ready. She just reached like this level of stardom. But she's dealing with like, I guess, like this depression, and inability to focus. And honestly, like, I'm not Chappell Roan, but I see myself in that a lot of times where I think, like, sometimes as a high performing individual or someone who, like, suddenly gets, like, the spotlight on me, I'm sure, like, maybe some other creatives can relate to this. And also, like, being a woman, there are parts of me where I'm like, holy crap, like, should I be humble? Like, is this enough to, for me to handle? Like, what does this mean for me? Like, how do I like keep on performing at this level? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it can be pretty existential, confusing, loud to be going through life at baseline, let alone facing a big transition like that, and or a breakup or whatever it might be. And yeah, I think it's a fine balance of how to respond to those questions as they come up. And yeah, life does not stop. It's always relentless and throwing us new existential conundrums. So
Yeah,
it's tough.
I know. I don't mean to make this like a therapy session for me, but I think sometimes it's like, yeah,
Go
I'm
for it.
like,
Honestly, go for
okay. Okay,
it.
fine. I love it.
I'm game.
Yeah, actually, I want to hear more about what it means to like be a therapist for you these days. Like, would you call yourself one? Because you're definitely seeing clients and patients and I remember like being in the other room from you and you're like, you got a packed schedule. Sometimes it feels like 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., like back to back clients.
Yeah, definitely. I would say I both am a therapist and becoming one right now because I'm in clinical training, but as part of clinical training, we do you know, we are clinicians half time, supervised clinicians, you know, getting our training, but we see tons of clients one-on-one. And yeah, to become a therapist, you have to be a therapist for quite a few years. So that's where I'm at right now. And yeah, it's, I mean, it can definitely be pretty packed days. I have been really enjoying it. I think I love, and perhaps folks in the artistic world can agree. I mean, I have just loved doing work that I feel is meaningful. Even, you know, maybe some days I'll see 5 clients and two of the sessions will feel good. And maybe a few moments from those will feel really good. And I'll know that I that day sat with someone and helped them. Even if, you know, it's not a black and white change or some huge breakthrough. It just has felt really wonderful to feel like I'm doing meaningful work. And yeah, for context too, before grad school, I was doing software engineering, mm-hmm. Which, you know, can be meaningful in its own way, but definitely has a different flavor of meaningfulness and not as much human to human connection. So that's been therapist life in a sense for me.
Yeah, being a software engineer, especially like post-grad from Stanford, and you studied symbolic systems undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways that's like kind of a traditional path, but also like I love how you chose your own interests after school and made it your own. Are there like any alternative therapies or like new research like on your radar?
Oh, good question. I mean, one therapy I'm loving these days is IFS, Internal mm-hmm. Family Systems. I don't know, have you worked with it at all?
Yeah, actually, I've been seeing a therapist, not recently, but I saw her for like maybe 6 months. Yeah, mm-hmm. She was super helpful, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty amazing therapy. I think as you're thinking about therapies and experiencing it, one thing I have noticed, which is, you know, common knowledge in some ways, is the more experiential your therapy session can be, where you are having a corrective attachment experience with your therapist, or you are experiencing your emotions in a new way, like you're relating to them in a new way in session, having that corrective experiential note is where a lot of the magic happens in therapy. And I think IFS is really great at going straight to the experience of the emotion and working with it in mm-hmm. in real time, whereas some of the other therapies, like CBT, to me is a little bit heady, where it's just kind of,
I feel, yeah, like I'm ruminating sometimes, like in cognitive behavioral therapy, whereas like Internal Family Systems for me kind of felt like the movie Inside Out. Like I was able to name all the little parts of me, what their goals were, and then ultimately realize like all those parts are me, especially when I'm like functioning. And then there is like mm-hmm. a dysfunctional side as well.
Yeah.
That is like a pattern that can be pinpointed. And I'm someone who's like really pattern recognition oriented. So if I can recognize it and then kind of undo a pattern, that's super helpful to me. Yeah. So on the note of therapies, I'm curious, I know that you do a bit of your own therapy as well. And has what you've studied changed the way that you've like sought out therapy for yourself? Also, I mean, you're talking to so many patients, so does that impact like how often you do your own therapy, just to like kind of come down from their experiences?
Oh, so interesting. Yeah, let's see, it's definitely changed a little bit the way I interface with therapy, just knowing what's going on under the hood. Yeah, like I definitely brought up with my own therapist somewhat recently, something about my relationship with him, because in mm-hmm. school I've learned, and in my training to date, I've learned so much about how the relationship with the therapist is a lot of also where the magic happens, you know, that relational corrective experience I was just talking about. So something like that I wouldn't have I wouldn't have ever done before as a patient. And then in terms of frequency, I, starting grad school, thought I would be talking about processing some of my own clinical experience a lot in therapy. That actually hasn't happened much. Maybe a handful of times have I said, oh, this has been emotionally taxing, or, you know, how mm-hmm. how am I supposed to deal with this part of things, or something, or, oh, I've noticed this about the way I relate to my own clients, etc. But no huge change. And in fact, I think I've almost gone to a lesser frequency. And part of that is it's a little bit weird to, I'm in therapy world so much of my day, and then to switch in, you know, I'm still in it with my own therapist. It's just The roles are reversed. And I'm, you know, it's just funny to switch from your own. There's been one or two times it's been back to back where I've gone from being a therapist to being a patient in like 10 minutes. And it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Maybe sometimes it just feels like lots of meetings. I don't know.
Yeah. I think Zoom is one thing I've learned. So I've tried and do as much clinical work in person. Mm-hmm. But 6 hours of Zoom, even if it's, you know, really wonderful person-to-person therapy, is still 6 hours of Zoom. Totally. So beware of Zoom.
So one thing that's not Zoom, tell me, I know that you went to Burning Man this year. How was it? Tell me about the 2024 experience.
Oh my gosh, it was awesome. Second time there. So the novelty of the first burn wasn't as much with me, but just still as magical and amazing. And really got to, you know, choose your own adventure, just like you're meant to with the burn. And yeah, what can I say? I mean,
were there as many people this year? I don't know why. For some reason, I had a feeling it was like a little bit, you know, 30%.
No, I think it was less. There was no traffic getting in or out, where usually it's crazy. And I think it was a little bit of more chill burn. I mean, you still felt like you were in a busy city and everything. But I think, yeah, things were a little less crowded on the whole, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you thought about going? What's your...
I have thought about going to Burning Man. I'm always like a little bit afraid because I want to be self-sufficient. I want to do it the right way. But then there's also this part of me that, like, I think panics around the idea of being self-sufficient. So I want to go with like a person who's like willing to integrate me with a camp. I want to go during a year where I don't feel like I have to like work too much. Like this year I've been like working kind of a lot. I also feel like I had some friends that went from Maui this year just for fun, because they're like, hey, why not? And I think they had a good time, and maybe it was like a great first year for them. So I still want to go. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a great, I mean, I always talk about Burning Man as it's a city. It's just like Manhattan. Mm-hmm. You can go and have a really different week depending on who you are and what you're looking for. You could spend the whole week partying. You could spend the whole week. My boyfriend went with me. It was his first burn, and he had kind of a wellness burn and just went to spas and
did he do
like
any yoga?
The farmer's market. And
I could totally see that.
And yoga, like, yeah, all day, and runs, like group runs at the burn. So you really can do it in any type of way. And I think it's a great city to put on your bucket list of cities in the world that you want to go to, you know. I mean, it's kind of the same but different, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of traveling in cities, didn't you also go to Japan like earlier this year? Or was that last? I can't remember.
I did. Right at the beginning of the year, like January 5th, I went to Japan to visit my brother who was living in Japan for the last year or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, but highly recommend Japan. Very different than Black Rock City.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, it was so wonderful. And I felt really safe traveling there. You've traveled there alone, right? And it was great.
Yeah, I did. I traveled there alone. I did a run around Imperial Palace. It was nice. Mm-hmm. It was really calm. This was like pre-COVID, so it was 2018. I liked going to the onsens. Did you do the bathhouses at all?
Yes, yeah. We did. We went up into the mountains where there's lots of onsens in particular. And it was winter, so it was very cold. It was wonderful.
I love
such
that.
An amazing culture.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love asking you about travel because I feel like I see you travel a bunch and then there's just, I don't get to like catch up with you.
I know. Yeah. I feel like I need to be asking you about the new culture you're exposed to too over there. I'm so curious.
Yes, you should ask me questions because like I will tell you, it's like, so I'm in outer Boise, Idaho, and it's such a culture shock and I like know nothing, but I'm learning everything at the same time. The area that I'm in is like a lot of farmland. There are horses. But then I go into the city for work a lot, like just 3 days a week at a design studio. And it's such a cute up and coming city. There's like lots of wine bars. This past weekend, actually, I went to this plain art festival. They have one going on like all week. And so there are these like older ladies, like 60 plus, just like painting the landscape. And there's like kind of up and coming like wine country out in the north. So actually yesterday I went and I brought my dog Charlie with me. He's like a pug beagle. And so I'm like walking around. It was kind of hot and there isn't too many people painting. So I was like, okay, like Charlie like took a dump and then I picked it up and I was like, okay, we're going to leave. We're going to leave now. And then as I'm walking away, someone is like, is that a puggle? And I was like, I turned around and then there's this man there and he starts like petting up my dog and we're chatting. And so I guess I have a date now tomorrow with this guy. Yeah. Yeah. And he was there to like paint, for this festival. And then conveniently he had a name tag. So I like Googled him and all of that. And I was like, oh, like he has like a very interesting background, actually, like architecture, landscape painting. Yeah. So we're going to go to a wine bar tomorrow. Yeah. Very casual.
What a great meet cute. Like any meet cute that involves a dog is a good one.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Yeah. So, you know, I think like in my head, I always thought that I needed to live in a city like New York or San Francisco to have like a meet cute like that. But I'm having like tons of meet cutes in Boise, Idaho. And I think it's because there's like so many people like me who are like, oh God, like I wish I could like afford to like live outside of Boise right now. But then all of us are in Boise and we're like, oh wait, you're here too. And that's kind of fun.
Totally. Yeah. I think embrace that. Absolutely embrace that.
I was gonna say it just feels like rabid like college vibes sometimes, but I love it. Yeah.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to be, honestly.
Yeah. And the rent is really cheap too, so I'm not paying rent at the moment, but you could get like a really nice like luxury apartment, has like a dog washing center, sauna, you know, $1,400, like one bedroom.
What is a dog washing center?
It's just like, I don't know if you've ever seen like buildings that have amenities for pets.
No, that's incredible.
Yeah, so it's one of those.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wait, so a one bedroom for $1,400, that's unreal.
Yeah, yeah. And then you could get like a regular bedroom, I think, for maybe like $700. Someone I work with was telling me that when she was in college, she paid $400 for an entire three-bedroom house, which is insane. I'm like, I want the housing market to crash, so it's like that again.
I mean, that is insane. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's cute. Like, there are some parts of, like, North Boise that kind of remind me of, like, Palo Alto. like the really cute parts, and then you just kind of go down a few blocks and it's like a city. Yeah.
How's the fall been? Is it getting cold? Like, are you having good leaves yet?
It's very temperamental right now. Yeah, it gets really cold sometimes in the morning, and then other times it'll randomly be like 80 degrees by 1 p.m.
Oh my gosh. So a
Yeah.
few years ago, I was in Ketchum, Idaho for this month, like September, October. You almost came, remember? But then
Yes, the
there were really
fires.
bad fires,
Yeah.
so we like that week I didn't go or something. But yeah, the fall foliage was amazing.
You know what I hear lately? So there's like fires going on a little bit, I guess, maybe north of here, but it's like sagebrush. So like we're just getting saged constantly.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Very clear, energetic portal then.
I guess so, yeah. And some people are like kind of allergic to sage. And then actually when I think of like indigenous practices and like closed practices, people would say that like saging is a closed practice or used to be. There's like some debate on that in the spiritual cultural community, which I don't feel like I know enough about. But I just thought it was kind of like funny because I actually love the idea of just like a random like sage fire, like we're just clearing it
Yeah, I
out.
love that too. Maybe
Yeah.
the clearing will like get blown around the country. We need that. We need a
Absolutely.
massive sage fire like post-election to be lit in the middle of the country and
Yeah.
blow everywhere.
I know Idaho, so that's the other thing too. It's like it is very much kind of like a red state. But then at the same time there's like lots of like Gen Z like people of color, and I'm like, okay, I kind of feel like this is a generational thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's hoping that
Here's hoping.
it's generational. I don't think so. I mean, there's a million and one things I'm interested in and can talk about psychology, but I feel like I gave the audience a good smorgasbord
You did.
to hear on, unless there's anything else that's interesting to you, which you want to touch on.
I actually do want to ask you, like, how do you, as I think more about this idea of balance and as this, like, narrative is shifting around being a girl boss, like, what are your thoughts about, like, being a woman and pursuing professional work?
Okay, wait, can you give me the two sentence update on what the narrative shift is with being a girl boss, just because you're up on this a little more than I am,
I
and I'm
think for
curious.
me, yeah, this, so I'm noticing this like cultural shift of people who are like, wait, wanting to be a girl boss is so like Sophia Amoruso early 2000s. That's for like older millennials who are able to like lean in and like get their spot at Facebook. We're like Gen Z now. This like younger Gen Z crowd is kind of like, that doesn't exist for us anymore. Actually, we're just kind of like being bullied to fall into like work culture that we don't love or necessarily agree with. And there's a massive need for like labor reform that is actually maybe specific towards like our biology. Like some women like need a little bit more rest because our hormonal cycle is different. Like the work week is built around like men's bodies at times, or like maybe the pressure to do it all is actually just like conditioning that doesn't fit in. So I think it's super personal, like depending on who you are. And then also me, I think like maybe sometimes I identify too much of being a hard worker because that's like a social, cultural conditioning thing. Whereas these days I'm like, I'm actually okay not being defined as a hard worker. But I have like value inherently. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, so many thoughts. So much to say on this. I mean, yeah, I think actually right now I'm in a pretty big state of confusion where on one side of things, I've been receiving really second wave feminist arguments my entire life, especially as a young girl. I went to an all girls school. Mm-hmm. And in the early 2000s, it was still kind of a second wave feminist narrative of you can do anything, you know, your career, like women for the world, go to the stars with your career, etc. Really emphasizing that, and don't let men get in your way, don't let anything like that get in your way. And then sorry, I think I have a lot of that hardwired into me. At the same time, now I'm confronting life in a more real way and realizing things like, yeah, well, actually a certain amount of hours, you know, maybe my body and spiritual core work better with a 30-hour work week than a 41, and maybe I want the balance to hit a little bit differently. And then maybe there are some things that I want to weave into my life, like partnership, that don't work 100% with the and partnership and caretaking and all of the above, that don't work perfectly with the girl boss, like working woman narrative.
Some of that can be kind of isolating, and I'm not gonna lie, sometimes I'm like, I'm okay, like, actually getting distracted by, like, someone who's, like, cute and nice and, like, adds some spice to my life.
Completely. So I think it's, I think it can breed a lot of confusion. And yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends right now, too, who are trying to unshackle from this narrative of hard work that you were kind of alluding to, too, of, you know, I've been trained my whole life by the society to shackle my self-worth to how hard I work. But now I'm kind of discovering that that's not the be-all end-all of who I want to be. That's not what I personally value. It's just being a workhorse. So how can I live in this world that still does have those values and still be true to myself? Yeah. And it's a really hard problem to solve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think in that equation too, there's, I think, maybe some talks about partnership and like how partners can show up to like help ease that burden.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, there's so much there, honestly. I mean, I think we're all figuring that stuff out in a sense, how to balance all these things.
Yeah, that is kind of the beauty of like being in your late 20s, early 30s. It's like, well, I guess this is life. This is like figuring it out and like being true to yourself still.
Saturn return tings.
Yeah, my Saturn return is like, I think it's going to give me some gifts soon. But first it was giving me a few beaters.
Yes, you've had a big one. Yours was like right on time.
Yeah. I actually told my coworkers about this the other day. Have you seen these Sonny Angel
no,
BBs?
Oh my gosh, what are those?
So this is a Sonny Angel BB, but this is like a toy for adult women that was like invented by an adult woman in, I don't know, some Asian country. But basically the idea is like, you know, maybe you don't want to have kids, but you love like cute, adorable things. And like maybe someday you'll have a kid, but right now, like, this is a little baby you take with you everywhere.
Love that.
Yeah.
Oh, love that. Love it.
Okay. Amazing. Well, I know we only have a couple minutes left, so thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today, Jane.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Okay, thank you.